AWR powered by SID Media.
Well, as we said earlier, we are joined on the line by Ms. Tryphosa Siweya. Tryphosa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh man, it's a male. I know Tryphosa has to be females. Are you fine?
I'm well, thanks.
Very well, thank you. Well, you are through to the Adventist World Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, this afternoon we want to talk a little bit about the children's mental health. First off, before we get into it, do children actually suffer mental issues?
Yes, they do. Quite often, actually.
Oh, okay. At what age do we start seeing children struggling with mental health issues?
I think, of course, then there's a variety of mental health issues, right? There are those that have got a strong physical element, you know. This would include things like people who have got intellectual disturbances mm-hmm. or limitations.
Right.
People who have got neurological disturbances as accompanying factors, right? Those are easy to pick.
Mm.
But those who have got mental issues that are purely psychological and don't have a neurological or, you know, a cognitive aspect, you begin to see them from the age where at least they can communicate both verbally and also non-verbally.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that is from age 2 going up.
From age 2?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't know this.
When a child can express anger, can express sadness, they withdraw, you know, you can see they can disengage.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I think I do want us to actually look at the symptoms. But before we do, what are some of the issues that children go through that would cause them to go through some mental issues? I know that bullying at school, for instance, could be one of them. But what else can we look at?
So, of course, the life of children is centered mainly around the environment, right?
Yes, yes.
So, things that are happening in the environment are the ones who are usually the precipitating factors in terms of giving rise to mental health issues in children.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're looking at how does the child perceive their environment?
Mm-hmm.
Do they perceive it as caring? Do they perceive it as supportive? You know, do they perceive it as welcoming? Do they feel that this environment is nurturing, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
If we're looking at the home environment, what is the atmosphere at home? How are the relationships? You know, what is the parenting style or skill that is being used? And things like that.
Okay. And then...
These can now... either make a child, you know, feel okay, or they can make a child feel sad, you know, and they can make a child feel rejected, they can make a child feel unwanted, they can make a child interpret the environment as being hostile, you know, they can make a child feel fail to develop what we call secure attachment
or
trust and other normal ingredients that are necessary for future relationships, or even for positive self-esteem or self-concept.
Man, this is quite serious, I must say. Now, when children are struggling with mental issues, health issues, at a very young age, are these, according to your knowledge and research that is out there, do they actually recover, or do these recur at some point later in life?
If they are not dealt with, right, they can render children vulnerable. But also, even if they are dealt with, depending, of course, on other factors about the child, you know, issues of resilience, you know, issues of support, social support, you know, what support system is there. Of course, they can render a child vulnerable later in life, where
mm-hmm.
they can fall back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To an issue that happened earlier on in childhood. We see this a lot with issues of trauma, you know, whereby you find that an adult would now regress, you know, to something that happened very early in their childhood, which was either never resolved or resolved but not sufficiently.
Now, I do want to actually see what is it that, because I know that, you mentioned earlier, you talked about anxiety, depression, et cetera, which are some of the mental issues that children, of course, go through. But there are some things that as parents we may not, relate to mental health. For instance, the oppositional person or defiant child. Would you ascribe that to a mental health issue when a child is defiant or oppositional?
Yes, it is one of the mental health conditions that we find in children. Oppositional defiance disorder. We usually call it an externalizing disorder. So a child uses behavior externally to demonstrate either that they are not happy, or that they are sad, you know, or that they are uncared. We see it as a communication of something wrong happening in the child. But it's being, scapegoated, you know, in the context of that oppositional defiance. Sometimes maybe a cry for attention for children. This is common also with children who suffer from hyperactivity and attention deficit disorder. Yes, so that is also something that we can consider as a mental condition. Because I think what people need to understand is to sort of understand that when we talk about mental disorders, right, we are looking at things that are affecting behavioral functioning, right? But sometimes some of these things affect mood regulation. But some of them also affect emotions, right? So all these three clusters of functioning, right, which is behavioral, oppositional defiant, which is one of them, which is emotional. Now talking about your anxiety and depression, sometimes even mood, you know, where a child would have mood issues, bipolar and things like that. Of course, we become very careful when it comes to diagnosing certain conditions, because what you realize with these mental disorders is that they show differently, you know, across different ages. So there are certain things that you'll see them, they're more prominent in adolescence, things like your personality disorders, right? You won't necessarily see them in children. And things like your mood disorders are more prominent in adulthood, right? But things like behavioral problems are more prominent in childhood.
Now, I just want us to quickly zoom in into a parent that has got this child who has got a mental disorder, because I when a child is defiant, when a child is not following instruction, I happen to know someone who's raising children who happened to be very disorderly and not follow instructions, quite oppositional, I must say, and our first response as parents is to say, we're going to discipline you. And of course, we do. We don't spare corporal punishment there, and all sorts of other punishments, whether we withdraw certain privileges, etc. Would you think that parents not knowing what is happening, how do they deal with this? Because it's quite complex, I want to imagine.
Yes, no, I agree with you. I mean, we take long to believe that something is a mental health issue, you know, and I think that is a typical reality in South Africa. We try everything else until, I don't know, through what means, then we sort of open up to the idea that maybe this may need a professional intervention. In most cases, we feel like this person is just naughty, like you said, or they just don't want to comply, you know. So I think as society, we really need to at least then shift, you know, and realize that some of the things that we may label as just naughtiness, a child could be having an issue which can be treated, you know, professionally. And of course, this can then save parents a lot of frustration. But also, we also realize that, like I said, sometimes parents also contribute, right? Either in the maintaining of the problem or in how it starts, you know? And sometimes, help seeking or seeking help also assists a lot of parents in terms of them gaining insight on how, you know, their parenting way, the availability and how they discipline the child can be used constructively in making sure that the child becomes a better child who understands that they also have a responsibility, you know, and who understand and respect the feelings of other people.
Yeah,
because most of these children, you know, they're very egocentric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very selfish. They've not been taught to understand that, okay, you need to respect the rights of other people. It's about getting their way, and if they can't get it, they throw tantrums.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah,
and this could have emanated from how this child has been parented, breastfeeding, and all those kind of processes, early processes of life.
So are you suggesting that this also could have their root in breastfeeding, you mentioned?
Yes, because remember, as early as that, a child is forming patterns of relating. Delayed gratification, immediate gratification,
I see.
Wanting things in your own time if you can't get them. How that was handled for the child also plays a very important role on how a child thinks of themselves, thinks about the world. Do they see themselves as a receiver and the world as a giver? And are they going to grow up as this person who can't deal with failure, who can't deal with delays in life, you know, who commits, who attempts to give up very easily because of a delay or a failure? All these things also can be traced in terms of how a child was raised. Were they raised to understand delays? Were they raised to understand that you can't always get what you want on your own time without being insulted over it, right?
Yeah. Oh, Trifosa.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yeah. We lost you there for a moment. I do now want to check with you in terms of children that have gone through traumatic, situations, post-traumatic stress disorder. I do understand that adults are able to handle that. Now, children lose their parents, others lose their grandparents, or perhaps a child, in a class, somebody that was their age mate, they used to play together, is now no longer in the class, and they are told that this person has died, or even a building falling and a near-death experience for the pupils in the class could cause these stress situations. What is the therapy situation around this?
What's important is to desensitize the child, right? To allow the child to express how they feel and talk about that, because that incident will be in their mind. And that is one thing about shock, you know, whether you're an adult or not, when there's trauma, there's that element of shock, which we must deal with, whether the child has already shown symptoms or not. So we usually call that debriefing, right? You need to debrief. You need to talk about that, which, you know, is causing tension in your mind, causing tension in your body, but sometimes even tension in your emotions. So that will be the first thing, to have the child have a space where they freely express, right, how it was for them to notice,
right,
or how it was for them to have been part of that process that you are mentioning. From there, I think you also want to see how the child is reacting, and so that you can support them. So that as much as there are going to be normal symptoms of trauma, it doesn't, become complex. Where a child now, will begin now to just show severe symptoms like nightmares, you know, struggling to sleep and things like that.
Beautiful. And lastly, Trifosa, the relationship, between a parent, teacher and the child, you know, those go together in terms of raising the child. And of course, there would be community there and extended family. But the main ones, I think, this. So you discover that the teacher is picking up certain behavioral patterns from a child, and they send parents a letter to say your child is misbehaving, your child is has done this and has not done homeworks and all of these things. And to you as a parent, and now as a parent, you start shouting and barking and saying you're not taking your work serious and all of these things that we say to children. From both ends, the child is not getting a reprieve. What can be done? Is there anything that a child can do? Because they're probably also not self-aware as children.
Yes. No, I think it's difficult for children to really... you are lucky if a child comes to you and say, I've got this problem, you know? That doesn't often happen.
Yeah.
So I think from a children's point of view, I wouldn't say this much, but I think like you just said, now that school and home are the two environments which, I mean, the life of a child usually revolves around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both people that are in those spaces, parents and teachers, must work together, you know, to see if they can pick up any issues with regards to kids. And I think we must take any concern serious, because, like I said, not all the kids have got that space where they are allowed to speak and express themselves freely to authority figures. Because in school, there are authority figures. At home, there are also authority figures, which have got, you know, boundary issues. So children sometimes, especially when it comes to things that hurt them and things that involve their emotions, not all of them are free to come and tell the teacher what happened. Usually, the teacher picks up, I mean, they notice a problem and they call a child.
Mm-hmm.
That's when a child then will respond, you know. It's uncommon where you find that a child has initiated that step.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, it is actually a very, very important subject, one that we're not able to, you know, exhaust with this time that we're given here. I think there's a lot more to unpack here, but unfortunately the time has led us to this very point. But Triforce, we do want to thank you so much. I think we need to explore this further, because it's a very, very important early childhood development issue, that which needs to be literally highlighted out there.
No, I do agree, and I'm available to assist.
Fantastic. Well, you have a good afternoon then.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.